So here we are again, recording our next podcast. I'm John Costa, and I'm with my colleague Rob Watson. How are you this week, Rob?
I'm very well, thank you, apart from the gloom.
Yes, it's looking out the window here, it's a little bit gloomy. It'd be nice to see a bit of sunshine.
Hopefully by the time this airs, it will be brighter and more spring-like.
Or we'll be under 7 foot of snow, one of the two.
It's February, so...
Maybe. What's interesting, though, you were saying, I was just asking you, wasn't I, about your trip to Nottingham over the weekend. It doesn't matter where you are, when it's gloomy, it can affect your mood.
Oh, it really affects my mood. You know, it's... It feels like it's you've got a blanket, a grey blanket over you, because it just, I mean, for some reason it feels not just, it's the air, the quality of the air, because it we're close to the motorway. It just has the smell of diesel and petrol smog everywhere. Mm. And I didn't get that in Nottingham, but it was just as gloomy. So it's like there's something here in Leicester, which is the air quality.
Yeah, definitely.
The environmental quality just isn't right.
Definitely has an impact on your sort of well-being and how you're feeling, don't you? Anyway, we've got a guest this week, someone that I met a couple of weeks ago. I'm looking forward to talking to Vincey. Vincey, how are you?
Yeah, I'm so great.
Yeah, good. Now, so tell me, where are you from? Tell everyone where you're from.
Hello, everyone. I'm from China, and I'm studying in the Montfort University, and my major is Global Arts Management.
Global Arts Management. Perfect. So welcome to our Heritage podcast. I'm very interested in finding out a little bit about where you're from. And I have a story that we're going to tell as well about why we're connected, which I think people will find a little bit interesting. So what do you think of Leicester? Let's start. How long have you been in Leicester now? What do you think of us?
I think I've been in Leicester for half a year, and I love this small city.
Small city. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Controversial, Rob. Small city. Now, you've just been to London for a couple of days. What was that like, going to London for the first time?
Yeah, it was like going into the real big city.
Okay. Because you worked in Shanghai for a while, you were telling me as well.
Yeah, because I've been in Shanghai for 3 years.
So that's a long time to immerse yourself in a city. And you're from Xi'an, aren't you? So how long does it take you to get from Xi'an to Shanghai?
From Xi'an to Shanghai, I think it's two or three hours by plane.
By plane, so flying, okay.
Yeah, and 5 or 6 hours by bullet train.
Okay, and how does Leicester compare as a city to Xi'an? Is it smaller than Xi'an?
I think Leicester is smaller than Xi'an. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the population in Xi'an is very huge and massive, because Xi'an is a very ancient old city that we have heritage of could date back into 2,000 years ago.
Mm. And you were telling me that it's actually it's recognized as the start of the Silk Road, the original Silk Road, or Marco Polo Silk Road times.
Yes.
Hence your old market you were telling me about.
The old market?
Yeah, the old market you were telling me about that you've got some photos of. You said that was a very ancient market right back to Silk Road times.
Yes, that old market, it's almost originally from Qin and Ming dynasty, which could be dated back around 500 years ago.
Wow.
So that's a really local market. It's like kind of outdoor secondhand market. Hmm. Yeah, it was originally serving as a government grain storage, and then becomes the local market for selling free goods and insects. Yeah, because the people at that time, they were fascinated playing with the birds. So they were feeding birds, petting birds, and then they love to watch cricket fighting.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's the market. You can buy some birds, fishes, and the cricket.
Fascinating. Well, it's nice to hear about somewhere else other than somewhere in the UK and some of this tradition. And of course, you know, Leicester's 2,000 years right back to Roman times with our newly waiting to be opened Jewry War Museum that's been revamped. So, you know, we've got quite a lot of heritage here as well. And it sounds like you've got in Xi'an as well. So we're going to take a short break now. And then when we come back, I'll tell you about 1991. So, 1991, why does John Costa here in Leicester have a connection with Xi'an? Well, I can remember very, very clearly coming home one day to visit my parents down in the East End of London, and them both announcing to me, bearing in mind they've never had an Indian food or Chinese food, never anything other than traditional English food, that they were off to China for 10 days because my dad decided he wanted to go and see the Terracotta Army, which I think had been found, did we say in 1974? It was nearly 20 years before, I think you said to me the other day, it had been found. And they promptly went off to Xi'an. Now, we've worked it out. You're from Xi'an and you weren't yet born for another 5 years when my mum and dad went. And I've shown you my dad's passport that he got for climbing the Great Wall and shown you the family photos and stuff. And you were quite fascinated that we'd gone, or my parents had visited China long before it had opened up and all the development. You said that was really, really interesting to hear.
Yes, that is really interesting to hear, because even the certification of climbing the Great Wall, the writings is very traditional Chinese writing, because the writings we are not used for now, because it's very much more complicated. Mm. So it's rarely to be seen even now. So I was really exciting to see that, and I even asked you to post that on the red note.
Well, you've dragged me kicking and screaming into having a red note profile, and we've put on there about heritage and the four museums that I run and the archive. So we've been talking about, we posted this, and I think it had something like 6,000 views. And, you know, loads of comments about, you know, that you saying that style of writing now is not used. It's almost like an old style of Chinese writing that's on it, which really fascinated you, didn't it?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Now, we got quite a few people got in touch as well, just saying that, you know, they've got a similar certificate, but it's in the loft. They can't find it. And it really, they were quite happy that someone had visited China back before it opened up, really. I mean, from working and living in Shanghai for 3 years, it's an ultra-modern city, isn't it? It could be anywhere in the world. It's like going to New York or to London or Paris. Mm. Shanghai, did you enjoy living there?
Yes, I enjoy living in Shanghai. Yeah, I was a photographer in Shanghai, shooting the commercial photos, and I worked as the producer in Shanghai as well, and I had my own exhibition in Shanghai.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about your exhibition.
Yeah, that exhibition is a solo exhibition, and in M50, which is the art quarter in Shanghai, there are many galleries there and artists working there. And I held my first exhibition there, and the topic is the distant cold surge. It's showing the people that I worked as a tour guide before COVID. So I went to Russia before, and I took so many photos like wandering people.
Okay. So how would you describe your photography? Is it street photography? Is it documentary photography?
I think my photography, it looks like telling a story. Because if you take much more time to look at my photos, you will be fascinated. You will be curious about the people, like why they are here and what they are doing and what's the atmosphere.
And have you done any street photography while you've been here in Leicester?
Yes, I did some street photography. Yeah, and I really enjoy the buildings here.
So our built heritage. You like the architecture and those kind of things.
Yeah, because the buildings from UK and China is absolutely different. I think here the building is much more prettier, and which in a photographer eyes that it could be, it can help me to generate much more nice looking photos.
Brilliant. I all like that. Leicester's better for taking photographs because it's prettier. Right, okay, we'll have to put that one down, send that off to the Chinese embassy for a response, shall we? Okay, let's take another break. Okay, so I want to talk to you now, Vincey, because when we were talking, when we first met downstairs, I was invigilating for the Computala exhibition that I was participating in for the first time downstairs with the digital artist Jazz Singh, and you came in and you were visiting because you've done some volunteering here before, haven't you, for events and stuff. And I was talking to you about photography, and we've got the second Doc Photo 8 exhibition coming up, which we've booked on the 14th to the 25th of July at Adult Ed, and I'm sure we'll talk more about that over the coming weeks and hopefully get each of the 8 photographers involved as well. But you've come on board and you're going to submit some photographs as well, and you're going to hope to help to co-curate it as well with me, which is fantastic. Hopefully use some of your arts management techniques and skills. So tell me about the photographs that you're going to be submitting to Doc Photo 8.
I'm going to submit my photos which I shoot the local market in Xi'an, which is the market we mentioned before, and I took some portrait photos.
And why did you take those?
Because when I took in that photos, I was curious about their outfit, because their outfit is much more like fascinating.
So what they were wearing, their outfits and stuff. Yeah, what people were, their clothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and I really enjoy the market, because when you wander in that market, you could hear, it's like an immersive live exhibition, because the local market for Xi'an, for us, it's not just the market. I think it is the memory for all the locals in Xi'an, because when you go in there, you could see the people bargaining, the people, sometimes they were arguing, and you can see the bird whistling, and also the cricket fighting. You could almost hear all of the humans' voices. It's very natural.
I guess that's interesting, Robin. It just bring you in there as well, because obviously we've got the whole thing with our market at the moment and the redevelopment and how that will eventually look. But we forget about the roles that markets had. I mean, beyond its biggest market, it was the biggest outdoor market in Europe. I mean, it is a central and has been a central point for people to get, you know, what they need, but you know, socializing, conversations, as well as maybe some well-known people like Gary Lineker's family were still involved in the market.
I mean, it was interesting. If you go to the Victoria Centre and the indoor market in Nottingham, it's dead. There's like 3 stalls there. Mm. And it's kind of one of those things which is the pulse of a town. And I think across the UK, we've lost the capacity to run and operate markets, and we've lost their cultural significance. Mm. And they're an entry point, particularly, you know, a lot of towns and cities are... the markets are the place where the new arrival immigrants often base, and then they get established. So you have an Indian market in Bangkok. There's like lots of different markets. There's the Indian market, there's the Persian market, there's the kind of local markets as well. But they're places which are kind of run on a low cost basis, and it's that kind of it's often the place where you go to for that you know, the bazaar experience of it's a lot of things moving very quickly. It's not part of the solid infrastructure of the town or the city. It's flexible, and it comes, and the trend, you can trace trends coming in and out, because what's being sold 3 years ago is not what's being sold now. You know, we've seen the rise of things like, you know, market stalls that are the head shops and the vape shops and things like that, and then, you know, they'll disappear and something else will come in. We've seen the loss of you know, fruit and vegetable stalls, whereas when I first came to Leicester, it was, you know, however many stalls there were, 90 stalls there, mm-hmm. all fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
But that's before the big supermarkets opened up around the city and then the smaller supermarkets. So you can really trace through what's going on within a town or a society and a culture and a community by looking at what's going on in the marketplace.
So picking up on what you were saying there, Rob, about the market, things like, you know, COVID having an impact on people going out and, you know, accessing space and things like that, the whole kind of 2 meters. But also we've had the rise of home deliveries. And I don't necessarily mean the bikes. I'm talking about, you know, being able to get your groceries to your door. Also, you know, everybody else offering fruit and veg now, you know, quite a lot of it when you get your weekly shops in some of the bigger supermarkets. What is the role of a market now, would you say?
Well, I think what we've not got yet, but it is starting to bubble through, is the food courts. Do you have food courts in Shanghai? Is it, you know, where you go and there's lots of stalls? You go to a place, usually you buy a card, you know, you pay money and you get given a card and you can take it around to each of the stalls. So that you know, it's like a marketplace, a food court, and that, you know, in Bangkok, when I've travelled there, there's lots of them. There's a very small one in Birmingham. There's one in Liverpool which opened up, which is again, it's quite small and kind of compact, but it's like we've not, and that idea of kind of internationalisation. Have you been to Norwich Market? Then you'll go. It's quite compact. It was a traditional kind of British market, but now it's lots of international food stalls that reflect, and the generation coming through, if you like, the under 30s, very keenly aware about the importance of food as a cultural form of expression, without having to go to restaurants and sit down meals, if you like, of the formal individual. This is about sitting on benches and having a communal experience. So I think we've not seen, and with the decline of things like the shopping malls, we've not seen a replacement for that yet. Mm. And we will do, because it's that cultural expression of the variety. When we look at Leicester and the diversity of the cultures and population that's recommend, you know, that's available in Leicester, you see the difference in terms of how, what kind of food is available and what kind of stories then go with that.
Now it's interesting because you were showing me some photos, Vincey, weren't you, recently, when we were talking about your market photos that you're going to submit for the exhibition. But you showed me a completely different set where it was for a company that was looking to do tourism in Jian, and you'd taken pictures of people eating at the market, going around visiting, taking part in some calligraphy and stuff. And you said to me, oh, well, this is where people get their breakfast, this breakfast market. And there was people kind of sitting on benches and stuff. Is that still quite vibrant in Jian, people kind of eating at the market?
Yes, it is very frequently. And you know, because Xi'an is the start point of the Silk Road, so there are many Muslim people there. And Xi'an locals, people will prefer to go to the Muslim quarter to have some food. And because Muslim quarter, they have so many streets, it's kind of like a huge area. So we normally having food outside on the street. Yeah, that kind of restaurant is considered as a very local restaurant. Yeah, we have a saying, because we have a very traditional food we called yang rou pao mo, which is you can add beef or mutton with the bean bread in that, and it would make the soup much more delicious. And we have seen that if you're eating that kind of food in a fancy restaurant, you must eat wrong. You must pick the wrong restaurant. If you're eating outside of the street, you are in the right place. So many people in Xi'an, they will prefer to eating local food, very traditional local food, outside on the street.
Yeah. I mean, some of those photos are fascinating as well. One of the things that's popped into my mind there is the terminology and the language that we use. You know, Rob and I talk about this quite a bit. You know, it's interesting, isn't it? You wouldn't go to a Muslim market in the UK. We wouldn't. That's not the terminology that we would use. We use like Chinatown or the Italian area, or you'd use like a descriptor of a geographic location, but you wouldn't use. We don't have a Jewish quarter where you can go and get food. Do we? We don't have a, you know, that we wouldn't use that kind of terminology.
I suppose.
Interesting, isn't it?
What was it like? I mean, you know. The East End, I suppose, was closest to a place, you know, kind of where there would be, you know, in Leicester, we've got the, you know, that we call it the Golden Mile and the restaurants that were associated with that. You know, it kind of changes and evolves, and the pickup's different, isn't it? You know, is calling somewhere Chinatown now not an appropriate description, but that's where, in Liverpool, the oldest European Chinese community, and it was called Chinatown, but it, you know, what does that mean? And in many ways, it's kind of putting people in boxes. But it's
What does it say by describing it?
It's that kind of the how it describes a place and how do you when you're walking around. So you get things like Brick Lane was, you know, the shift and the move, the gentrification of like Brick Lane has moved it from what was the main community?
Well, it started out as Huguenots, and then when I was a kid, it was Vietnamese boat people, and then it was the Bangladeshis, and then you know, the communities. It was always where, I mean, I live quite close to there, so as a kid at school, it was always the transient area where the new community would come to. So, yeah, fascinating. So, what I want to talk to Vincey about now is we've had this idea of doing an event about Leicester and Gian, haven't we? So once Doc Photo 8's out of the way, we're going to plan this cultural heritage exchange around Gian and Leicester. And what was fascinating was finding out the similarities of things that we have in both of our cities, because we were talking about you've got a city wall that you can cycle round on top of. And we've got a little bit of the city wall dotted around the town, which is pretty much crumbling and falling down. You've got a bell tower. We've got a clock tower. We were talking about the role of the market. You know, we've both got a market area that we can photograph. So you're going to photograph and got photographs from Gian, and I'm going to do Leicester and invite some friends. Hopefully Rob will do some photography with me. What do you think is the main thing that someone will discover by visiting Gian? If they were to go on their own, what would they be able to find? What was the experience you would hope they would have?
I think that I highly recommended the Xi'an Museum, because in that museum you could see the things that could never go abroad to see. Yeah, because that things was found in, I think it's almost like several years ago. It was, they are the antiques in Tang Dynasty.
Okay.
Yeah, and also I highly recommended the local market.
Simply because of what you can see and what it represents and how old it is and stuff like that. Yeah. Rob, if someone was coming to Leicester, what would you say is the one thing that they must see from a heritage perspective?
Oh, that's a
you're from Liverpool, so it'd be the Beatles, or something like that. But yeah, Anfield.
I mean,
neither of which you're interested in. So that's interesting.
No, football. Yeah. But, for me, it would actually be the Great Central Way.
Okay.
And how, you know, when you look at the photographs of how it was demolished and the deindustrialization of Leicester that took place, and that you can still walk along there. And even though now it's kind of quite, they've allowed nature to take its course in many places, but there's still the remnants of signals and embankments and bridges and things like that. And as you walk through, you know, you can go from one end of the city to the other, just pretty much in a straight line. And that gives you a different view of the city. And, you know, it's a walking or cycling tour that you can do with that rather than being in a car. You'd probably circle the city if you're in that case. But, along the and, you know, parallel with the River Soar.
Yeah.
And seeing the back end of things as they what were formerly industrial units. But you know, gradually the redevelopment's been happening, and you can see the traces of that industrialization that was there.
Yeah, I mean, similar to the Great Central, that's a good choice. I would have said the canal. You know, walking along the canal, just so you kind of get the back end of some of Leicester's heritage.
Well, now they're very much represented as heritage, natural environments. But, you know, even just 40, 50 years ago, they were highly industrial spaces and nobody considered them. The canal was straightened in order to, you know, it's to provide a bit of a promenade for people, but also to give, kind of in easy access for industrial barges and deliveries and things like that.
Yep.
And if you want to travel in Xi'an, and you must go to Terracotta Warriors, which is the 8 wonders of the world, and you could even see the archaeologists is working there.
I think what's fascinating is my parents I've inherited into the China section of the Parallel Lives Network archive these 5 photographs, all of which are very dark, sort of, because they weren't allowed to take pictures of the Terracotta Army when they went. They went on a military aeroplane from Beijing in 91 to Xi'an, and it was very kind of, you flew into a military airport and they showed you the Terracotta Army, shouting out to people like, don't take any photographs, don't use flash and all that. And then I've looked at photos from the Terracotta Army now that Vinci has shown me of people doing Instagram poses and well lit and all this sort of stuff. And it's interesting to juxtaposition the 2 photographs over that period of 40 years. Yeah, you know, things have changed.
This might be a little bit sensitive, but groups of Chinese tourists don't have a good reputation. So I was in...
I'm thinking of Angkor Wat, Rob, when we went to Cambodia.
and I'm thinking that when I was in the Grand Palace in Bangkok last year, and the groups of Chinese tourists kind of taking selfies and start to do like dances for TikTok and things like that, they interact with the heritage environment in a different way. Would you say would be the mindset of Chinese tourists who are discovering the heritage of other places in East Asia, in the Orient? You know, what would you say? What's the perception of that? Is it? Am I being unduly harsh and rude?
I think it depends on the group of people. For me, because I am a photographer, and my friends, they are. And all of my friends, they are my peers. So when we going abroad to see the venue, we prefer to waking up just as late as we can and scrolling around and try to indulge ourselves into the sceneries, knowing the culture and the history. And most important is we will take some photos, no matter the photos of the scenery, the street photo, or ourselves. And I could imagine the group of people you mentioned, because you know, for Chinese people, it could be a little much more, a little bit expensive for them to travel to the European countries. And all the schedule was created very tight, so they don't have enough time to indulge themselves in each venues, knowing the history, and the only thing that they can do is to try to take photos as many as they can, and doing the selfies and doing the whatever the photos, and then they will post on our WeChat Moments. It's our most popular social media, and to showing people that they go in abroad. Yeah, that's the thing.
I suppose the lesson from the conversation really is, in a kind of globalized world, the cross-reference points are not easy to unpick. It's like a threat, you know, a kind of a a garment that's got its thread isn't straightforward, and if you unpick it in one place, it has an effect somewhere else. So things like tourism and recognizing that people from different countries have different experiences of tourism. So for international tourism, Chinese tourism might be fairly new for a lot of people. But then there's the scale of tourism that goes with that. Whereas the, you know, the kind of European models of tourism are different, or American models of tourism are different. So,
yeah.
And then that heritage of the question, why are you visiting somewhere? If it's just to show that you've just visited and that you've just been there and you've got the selfie for that, is that worth it? Is that something? You know, so we're wrapped up in the, yes, I did it, the experience model, but nobody really contemplates the value of what you're getting out of where you visited.
Yeah, I mean, I think that fits really with my first experience of going abroad in sort of 86, 87 to like New Zealand and Australia on Operation Raleigh. You know, and probably since different places, you know, like Nigeria and South Africa and Cuba and stuff, is you meet, particularly look at Americans, for example, you know, they get two weeks holiday a year, you know, so therefore, you know, travel was a premium. You know, when I first started going, like I said, 87, 86, 87. So what would happen is you'd either get young people that were there with like the Peace Corps or on some kind of structured program through university, cultural exchange. Anybody sort of middle-aged, 30s, 40s, their job involved them traveling. They weren't traveling for tourism's sake or holiday. They were working. And then that's why all American tourists were older. You know, looking a certain way with a hat and a pair of shorts, you know, that kind of stereotypical American tourist, was because they'd retired and they then had the time to go to Europe and go round all the golf courses and villas and places like that, chateaus that they were visiting. Whereas now that's kind of changed now. So, you know, if you were to meet someone there that was from America who was 35, they could just well as be studying, they could be a digital nomad, or they could be or working. And I think that's what's changed about the world. It's the fact that everyone's starting to get to the point where places are accessible. And we forget about this, isn't it? I mean, you know, this is how we learn about heritage and culture away from the mainstream media and who our government says we should be friends with and, you know, who our enemies are on that. You know, suddenly go to that place and immerse yourself in it. Keep away from the shopping centres and go and eat in a market and eat street food and stuff like that. And suddenly you'll meet real people who are just like us. Yeah. So final word from Vincey. Have you enjoyed coming on our podcast? Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. I really enjoyed the podcast, and recording this podcast make me feel I was seeing the live podcast.
Brilliant. Well, I'm looking forward to getting your help to co-create Doc Photo 8 in July. And then later on after that, we're going to do a cultural heritage exchange between Jian and Leicester, which I'm fascinated about. And I think it's a great idea with your 8 photographs in Doc Photo 8 to have audio of the market plan, because I think that's one of the most fascinating things out of it. So thank you very much for joining us. And Rob, enjoyed that one? That was a good one, that one.
Yeah, at same time next week.
Absolutely. Bye.